This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk with me, Dan Clark. Now, I have been away for a couple of weeks and my, what a few weeks it's been. There's literally not enough airtime to cover the amount of news that seems to be vomiting onto the world on a daily basis. I mean, what is going on? We had the referendum, the fallout afterwards, Boris, Gove, Farage. All proving to be total bellends. The Chilcot inquiry, the bombings in Istanbul and Baghdad, Trump continuing to be a total maniac. I mean, did you hear him complimenting Saddam Hussein's tactics the other day? And I'm going to check out of society. I mean, if it wasn't for a little bit of joy in the form of Wales doing so well in the Euros, which, by the way, for me to say that as a non-sports fan, but yet, I just loved the fact that they did so well. And Murray is looking like he's going to go all the way again. Although that's now going to have complications, because if Scotland get what they want and leave, then us English, little Englanders, we won't be able to say he's British anymore. He'll just be Scottish even when he does win. It's what's going on? I'm terrified. So thank God for TV and movies, which cheer us up. And thank God for today's guests, who are both very funny, lovely people. In a second, I'll have my old mucker, James Gill, here chatting about film news. And in a while, I'll be chatting to Tom Davis, star of BBC Three's A Murder in Successville. But first of all, here's a song. This is by Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam, and it's from the film soundtrack Into the Wild, which he wrote all but two of the songs are covers, but all the album was written specifically for the film, directed by Sean Penn, Into the Wild. And Eddie plays every single instrument himself, which gives it this wonderful sort of recorded in my garage feel. I'm a big fan and I love this album. I know a lot of people who don't like Pearl Jam, but they love this album. So if you're not a Pearl Jam lover, check out this album. It has a very Neil Young, Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan feel. And the film is about escaping society, which I think is something we're all thinking about right now. This is Society by Eddie Vedder.
Oh, it's a mystery to me. We have agreed with which we have agreed. And you think you have to want more than you need. Till you have it all, you won't be free. Society, you're a crazy breed. I hope you're not lonely without me. When you want more than you have, you think you need. When you think more than you want, your thoughts begin to bleed. I think I need to find a bigger place. 'Cause when you have more than you think, you need more space. Society, you're a crazy breed. I hope you're not lonely without me. Society, crazy indeed. I hope you're not lonely without me. Less is more. But if less is more, how you keep in score? It means for every point you make, your level drops. Kinda like you're starting from the top, and you can't do that. Society, you're a crazy breed. I hope you're not lonely without me. Society, crazy indeed. I hope you're not lonely without me. Society, have mercy on me. I hope you're not angry if I disagree. Society, crazy indeed. I hope you're not lonely without me.
Beautiful. Some might say depressing, but I think beautiful. All about checking out. Would you like to check out, or now that you have a kid, are you, do you need society's...
I think if I checked out of society, that would make me a very bad dad. Yeah. Where's daddy? He's literally never coming back.
Yeah. Well, you could do a Mosquito Coast and...
Take her with me.
Go and live off the land somewhere.
Okay, yeah.
So you're, like, you touched upon this on a chat we had before, that you're a big Pearl Jam fan. Something I have noticed is in this country, or certainly with the people I have been friends with over the years, they're not a massively popular band amongst the people I know, even though, and they're not always in the news and or in front of magazines and stuff, and yet they have this ridiculously massive following. And when I found out you like them as well, I was pleasantly surprised.
I love Pearl Jam so hard that if I actually thought about it, I reckon I could burst into tears. They mean so much to me. I've loved them since I was 12-13 years old. And they have grown up with me, with you. Yeah. That, you know, their music has changed. They started out very angry and intense. And while the intensity remains, they seem like happy dudes. I mean, some of their more recent songs are positively joyous.
Well, I would say one of the things that frustrates me about them, you know, like you get some bands that had one hit that doesn't reflect the rest of their catalogue, mm-hmm. but people just think that's what they are. Because they withdrew from the spotlight in the early 90s because they were like, I can't handle being this famous.
I admire them for that.
Yeah, and I think that's amazing. But everyone always says... I think if you mention, even just say the name, they think of them in the early 90s.
They go, oh, Jeremy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they don't know all the other, like, 10 albums that they made and how much they changed, because they just shied away from the... It was only the people that followed them that saw the change.
And saw their best ever work.
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes I look back on that stuff and now you think, wow, that is... It's pretty dated, but...
I mean, Versus, the second album, I think, was the fastest-selling album in American history. Yeah. I think it sold something like, was it a million in a week? Yeah. Like, ridiculous numbers, and I think Pearl Jam collectively went, no thanks.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they would put their longevity down to. That's also why they're still around now.
It didn't help that Kurt Cobain slagged them off a little bit in the early days.
Sure.
Because they were, Nirvana was so clearly the cool punk band... but I just think Eddie Vedder is a soulful, beautiful songwriter, and I'm gently in love with him.
I would love to meet him, but yeah. I know that I would sob like a late 80s era Michael Jackson fan. It'd be too much for me to take in.
Yeah.
Oh. So if I met Vedder, yeah. Oh my God, I just shudder to think. I'd explode, I think.
I think I would probably wet myself. Why does he do that? Why? Anyway, listen, because, we're really off brand here.
Because they perform from their heart and their soul. That's why they mean
something,
so much.
Which is something that doesn't happen anymore. No. Like music that means something, where
means
people
so
sing about issues and politics, or, you know, like, or even love songs, but that come from some deeper place, is seen as a bit naff, or like we're so afraid to be earnest about stuff. Yet it's the perfect time to write stuff like that.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, you and me sobbing on the number 59 bus as well. Just Breathe was the first song at my wedding, so our first dance, and the DJ got it wrong. This is a niche Pearl Jam joke. So I'd written down Just Breathe.
And he put Breathe.
And he played Breathe, yeah. Which, if you're a Pearl Jam fan, you will know is a very different song.
Oh dear. Okay, well listen, let's talk about films and television because that's what this show's about. But we could do a 1 hour special on our love for
easily
all the boys. Okay, so just before we talk about news, I want to quickly mention to you a film I saw the other day.
Okay.
That really surprised me, and I might get a bit of a sort of, you know, frowns from this. I don't know if you've seen it. The film No Escape with Owen Wilson.
Yeah,
and
I've
Lake
seen
Mount.
It. I've seen it, and Piers Brosnan.
And Piers Brosnan.
I thought now, Piers Brosnan was wonderful in that.
Now, I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed
this
film.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well.
Why did it just suddenly appear on Netflix, but it was nowhere else before?
It was at the cinema for about an hour.
Was it? Did it actually get a release?
It had a cinematic release, but a brief one, and not many people saw it. But I thoroughly enjoyed that film. It was very tense. I mean, the scene where they have to... I'm not spoiling it because it happens quite early on. The scene where they have to throw their children from one building onto another, you can barely... You can't take your eyes off the script.
No.
Strongly recommend it. I agree.
I felt it's got problems. A bit too slow. Too much slow-mo at some points. Piers Brosnan, who is amazing in it, tonally it's not quite the same film when he pops up a bit, but it made me realise why I have a bit of a problem with how many sort of fantasy and superhero films there are, because it was the first time I'd watched a sort of action film in inverted commas that where I was literally tense watching it because it's about two ordinary people
in a
really extreme situation. I was like the whole time going, fuck, what would I do? Could I do that? Could I throw a child across? You know,
all
those things. I thought, I can't remember the last time I saw a film that really put you in the situation like that.
I would say Captain Phillips is probably the most ultimate example of a film. Because often those kind of tense thrillers, they ebb and flow, they'll let you off for 10 minutes. Yeah. Captain Phillips from pretty much minute one to the very end, you are gripped onto the armrest.
And then you're a prize for sticking with that intense... journey is to see Hanks have an amazing breakdown, which is so emotional. It's like I walked out of that film. We're reviewing old films here, but I walked out of that film just totally like I'd been battered, but in a good way.
That film did not get the love it deserved. I think that will be remembered as a minor classic in years to come.
Amazing. So, what is new out there, James?
So I think that...
what is news, I guess?
I think Oscar... I mean, this is July, and the fact that I'm going to say the word Oscar and not refer to a disgraced South African athlete is quite incredible. I think Oscar season is starting even earlier. So I've seen a couple of films recently that I think... So normally Oscar season, as we know, tends to kick in from about November onwards because the thinking there is that by the time we get to the Academy Awards in February, films have built up that nice level of momentum going into them.
And everyone has a short memory, so they won't remember films as far back as...
Exactly.
August.
Exactly. So I wonder if it's a case of a couple of studios thinking, well, if we get our homework handed in early... We might get extra marks. So,
but doesn't that go against the grain? Is that a risk, do you think?
It is a risk, but we're going to find out if it's going to pay off, I suppose. Yeah. So I saw a film last night called Hell or High Water, and my goodness, that is one of the best films I've seen in a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
I was meant to go into that, so I'm gutted you're saying this.
Dan Clark was supposed to be my plus one last night, and I thought, because on paper it's a heist movie, and you think, well, it might be okay.
Yeah, but I love the trailer.
And then as the film was playing out, I kept thinking, oh, Dan. Oh, Dan. So I would predict that Hell or High Water... I think you can expect Jeff Bridges to have at least a Best Supporting Actor nomination. Mm-hmm. He is wonderful. There's one actor in that film who, for years, I think is wonderful, and it's Ben Foster.
Yes.
Now, when that guy...
Yes. I'm so emotional emotional about Ben Foster.
Ben Foster is wonderful. So he,
yes.
So him and Chris Pine play brothers who are bank robbers, and Jeff Bridges is a Texas Ranger who has to go after them. It is going to get compared to No Country for Old Men. Mm-hmm. I personally preferred it to No Country for Old Men. Wow. It's from the director... Yes, indeed. It's from the director of Stardup, which is a... Yeah. Cracking film.
Oh, what is going on with me?
Puberty live on air.
Yeah, finally.
So when that comes out, in a few weeks, go check it out. And then another film is Born to be Blue, which I have written about in next week's shortlist. So check that out. Ethan Hawke has been nominated for Oscars, I believe, four times now, including writing credits. Mm-hmm. So this could be another nomination. He is incredible as Chet Baker.
So when you say that you think Oscar season is starting to, or like Oscar talk is beginning earlier each year, Have you heard people talk about Oscars, or is this just you sitting there?
No, I have heard people talking about Oscars. So I think if this pays off, and if I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but technically that is why I'm on this show, to try and make a good call. So a few weeks ago I talked about the China thing, and then we are starting to see more and more of that. So Dwayne Johnson's next movie, or one he's making next year, will be shot in China. So, you know, that is a trend that is happening. So what I'm saying is, if Ethan Hawke ends up getting nominated for Best Actor, and if Hell or High Water gets, say, nominated for Best Screenplay or Best Supporting Actor, maybe other studios will think, well, maybe we should get our films out in summer. Because what happens is, you do have that bottleneck situation where Christmas and beyond is just chocker with Oscar contenders, and some really good movies, Captain Phillips would be a good example, just don't quite make it all the way. Yeah.
Would you say, I mean, can those, because it's, you know, historically it's the smaller, as in the non-box office-y tentpole movies that get Oscar nominated. If you put them out in the tentpole season, do they stand more of a chance to be seen or less?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, because this summer has been a very up and down summer for blockbusters. So some have done well, some have badly underperformed.
What's done well?
Finding Dory has absolutely torn it up in the US, whereas a film I enjoyed a great deal, Independence Day Resurgence, is currently underperforming. So it hasn't been wall-to-wall blockbuster smashes this summer. So I would say that this year is quite a canny year to get out those Oscar contenders quite early.
Well, I kind of trying to work out in my head whether I like the idea of spreading out the more typically the films I like across the year, or whether I like that sort of embarrassment of riches at the end of the
year. I would
say
it's better to spread out, because otherwise there are only so many films we can all see. So I say spreading out is a very good thing.
I'm not gonna
okay,
add to the spreading out.
I offered that up, and you
put a strange image in my head.
Correctly declined.
I think you should spread out more.
I should spread out more.
Finding Dory, a massive smash hit
in the US. It's yet to open here.
Yeah.
It is joyous. I loved it a great deal. I think it was as good as Finding Nemo.
So, is Nemo in Dory?
Yes.
Okay. No spoilers, but.
No, I will not spoil it. Please go see it.
But Dory is
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah, and it's she was the fish that forgets every couple of minutes, right? Is that right?
Yes, and that is a huge plot device in the movie.
Okay.
Please go check it out. So I took my.
It's quite handy actually to have that trait for a plot device, isn't it?
I
can just start any point, restart again.
I was about 2 minutes into the film and I thought, oh, that's worked out well. So I took my one-year-old daughter to go see that. So a lot of friends were saying, you're doing what? You're taking a baby to the cinema? And it worked. It worked a treat. So if you have very young children, maybe it's because it's fish and it's very bright colours and it's very funny voices, they will be entertained for the full hour and three quarters. So that would be a huge... family tip from me would be Finding Dory. Fantastic.
We do keep talking about discussing our favourite Disney films, and we've never quite done it. I mean, do you want to attempt it in a...
So what would be your favourite ever Disney movie?
It's a bit predictable.
I'll go first, if you'll. I'll spread out first.
Yeah, go on.
I would say the original Jungle Book, although I haven't seen it for a few years.
I came up with two.
Dan, we are separate. I'd have gone with the other one as well. Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins or The Jungle Book are my two.
So my mom, bless her, told me that she showed my nephews, again, sorry for this mental image, Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And she was surprised by how poorly it had aged. She says it takes a lot longer to get... The two lads lasted about 10 minutes and they were out of there.
Yeah.
Because in an age of very short attention spans, it takes a while to get going.
It's interesting, because I can totally see that, because obviously it's on every year on TV at some point, and I always end up watching it. And it is... I think it's dated, as in aged, in terms of its craft and aesthetically... brilliantly, like it still looks like a beautiful masterpiece, but it is fucking slow by today's family film standards.
It's amazing, isn't it? That happens a lot, doesn't it, when you rewatch a classic from when you were young. You're like, when is this going to get going? But I mean, I think the bits where they blend the cartoon and the real life is phenomenal. That still holds up. Mm-hmm. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, that whole scene, It's a Jolly Holiday, they still hold up, which is astonishing.
Step in time, come on. Oh my God.
Oh, holy pals. She won the Oscar for that, didn't she?
Did she?
I think she did, yeah. Can you imagine that?
What, a musical winning... An animated
musical winning... It's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm not saying she didn't deserve it. Someone who gets knocked in this country because of his Cockney accent is Dick Van Dyke. His performance in that film is so phenomenal. Good. The physicality... I know he's claimed that he was a bit carsied while he was making it. No, Dick, you are wonderful in that film. Take full responsibility for your awesomeness.
And he plays the old character as well.
That's right.
Which is just like, just goes to show what an amazing comedy performer he was.
One of the great... I loved his performance so much I just ripped a chair out of the floor. I apologise.
So I was looking through Disney films on Wikipedia, the reliable website.
Yes.
With everything on it. I couldn't believe... how bad Disney films get in the 80s.
Oh, they went through a real
nadir. Really bad, really bad time. But the
Black Cauldron?
I've got
Basil the Great Mouse Detective.
I mean, that was a classic. No.
Yeah, sorry.
but the era I really like, even though it's not considered classic, was the 70s when they started doing live-action screwball comedies like the Herbie Goes Bananas films.
Love
and
that film.
Strongest
the
Man in the World,
yes.
All those sorts
the
of...
The Kurt Russell movies, he was banging them out as well, bless him.
Yeah. I mean, I forgot about that. Like, that has a real, like, feel, and whereas the 80s just was like... It doesn't have that nostalgia quality that... I don't know what it is. It was too young. I would have watched those 70s films in the 80s when I was a kid.
Ditto.
But there's something really sort of lovely about that.
Maybe because it transports us both back to when we were nippers.
I wonder if one of those Herbie films would play... How that would play in front of kids now.
Well, they rebooted it, didn't they, with Lindsay Lohan and Michael Keaton.
What an odd trio. The Carl,
Herbie,
Lindsay,
Keaton, Lohan together at last. Very quickly, Disney then roared back in the 90s with Aladdin, The Lion King, etc.
What was Beauty and the Beast? Did they do that one then?
Yeah, that was a big one. Was that nominated for Best Picture?
No, it might have been.
Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, Aladdin. That is a holy trinity.
Do you know, I've never seen The Lion King.
What?
I said I've never seen The Lion King.
I heard it, I just don't believe it. You will love it, my friend. You'll be singing your heart out.
Really?
It's a circle of light. I'm sorry, Elton. I am so sorry, because I know he's a listener. It's wonderful. And go see it live if you can.
So what else have you got for us? News, reviews. Have you seen anything in the last week?
I mentioned a couple there. Mm-hmm. With so Born to be Blue. He's probably embargoed, so I better be careful what I say. But I think I can say... I better be careful. You can probably tell that...
I don't want us to get sued.
You can probably tell that I enjoyed it. Yeah. But maybe even that is saying too much. One thing I was going to talk about, you have the Star Wars celebration coming up.
Oh, yes, which you are going to.
I cannot wait.
Oh, my God.
So that is next weekend. So I think there are a couple of tickets left. Not many. So it takes place on Friday, Saturday and Sunday with different events and people giving lectures and you'll get to meet your heroes, etc. And I think some more details will be revealed for Rogue One. And I think possibly some details will come out about Episode 8. So if you are a Star Wars fan...
Who isn't?
But you do meet the odd person who are not...
Yeah, who aren't bothered by it, yeah.
So that will be very exciting indeed. I will report back on what happens.
So will there be things like people demonstrating how they designed like animatronics or...
It's that
or
sort of thing. Yeah. And then, so it's all that. It's all the technical side of it. But then also they will have, as you can see on the website, people like Mark Hamill will be there to say a few words. Carrie Fisher will be saying a few words. Rian Johnson, who's directed Episode 8, I believe, will be there. I'm sure there'll be more details coming out about the Solo, Han Solo movie. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Star Wars fan, that will be one to get down to.
I'm really excited about Episode 8 because I weirdly I've met people that didn't love it, but I adored Looper.
Yes, indeed. Terrific. No? No, absolutely.
Okay, the pause made me think.
Rian Johnson's wonderful. I mean, what an exciting choice. And Brick is a fantastic film as well.
So yeah, that's so the, and I know you said that there were some slight complications with Rogue One, but I'm really excited by that as
We still believe.
Yeah, we believe.
We believe.
Now that we know Vader's definitely
So that's been involved. Confirmed. Vader is definitely back.
This is great. Okay, well, look, James, thanks for joining me. I feel like it's been too long.
Yeah, it's been too long. It's always lovely to see you.
Yeah.
And listeners, please know that Dan's tan is
Dan's
back
tan.
With a bang.
Yeah. So here we have another. I've decided to pick another song from Into the Wild, the Eddie Vedder soundtrack. After this, we'll be chatting to Tom Davis. This is Hard Sun.
When I walk beside her, I am the better man. When I look to leave her, I always stagger back again. Once I built an ivory tower so I could worship from above. When I climbed down to be set free, she took me in again. There's a big hard sun. To greet me, she is mercy at my feet. Yeah. When I see a pin of charm, she just throws it back at me. Once I dug an early grave to find a better land, she just smiled and laughed at me and took her blues back again.
Joining me now in the studio, in inverted commas, is the wonderful actor, comedian, writer, and ex-carpenter?
Scaffolder. I'll take carpenter.
Yeah?
It's a hell of a trade, carpenter. I've had some done at my house recently. It's a really good trade.
Is it something that you sort of look back on in your... Well, first of all, I should sort of just make sure everyone knows who I'm talking to and that I'm not actually talking to a scaffolder who wishes he was an actor, writer, comedian.
Yeah. Illusions of grandeur.
I have with me Tom Davis, who you will know from his various roles on the television, including Plebs, Cockroaches, The Keith Lemon Show, Lemon La Vida Loca, Bad Education, and of course, currently airing Murder in Successful, which you are a creator of, right? Do you write as
well? Won't take all the credit for creating. I'm sort of a, I'm there. It's been me and an
amazing
group.
There's no one here to dispute it if you want to take it.
I would take the credit then. I would happily take it. No, I'm a part of a very amazing team, along with a producer called Avril Sparry and Andy Brereton. It's a sort of a group of us have nurtured it. And
were you there at the inception?
Yeah, I mean, I think about 4 years ago, they first sort of brought me the idea of doing a sort of murder mystery for sort of celebrities would come in, and it sort of went through quite a lot of different, you know, different forms to end up with what you see now. Joe Stefan, the director, sort of came on board to make it a lot more noir-esque, and I've been with it since. Yeah, I think Johnny Vegas and other people turned it down.
So it's been 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
Was it always to have famous people as the guests?
Yeah, that was always...
Because I could see a version where it's members of the public as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked now about doing it with members of the public. Mm. I think that the beauty of it with celebrities, I think, is that you see a weird side or a real side to them that you don't often see. If you ever do a chat show or a panel show, you're very formatted and you know what's coming. And I think the thing that's nice about Murder and Successful is your guard sort of very up, and then as you slowly got more comfortable with it, you sort of start seeing the real them, and also that sort of moment of unexpectation, not having no idea what's going to be thrown at you, it sort of opens something up. It's very real.
What? But surely there's an element of, because it's all shot and looks nice, that you have to do retakes and things, right?
It's only ever twice.
Really?
The first reaction.
Do you have lots of cameras?
We have three. Yeah, three cameras. So the first reaction that you see of theirs is pretty much what we primarily use. And then
so
we'll
you don't
do
go, could you look shocked again?
No. The beauty of it is I always think it's a bit like, you know, the at Blackpool, you've got the haunted house, yeah, the House of Horrors that you go around, and you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So that those moments are priceless. And what we always found is the second time you do it, especially if you ever have to do it for a third, for any, you know, maybe a cameraman gets in the background or a sound guy, it's not really happened much, but they know what's coming and then they start acting. That first time when you first see that raw sort of, oh, fuck, yeah, like that, I think at the moment in series one, say for example with Jamie Lang, where he's in with the Carr twins and they go crazy and he's genuinely petrified.
Really?
Yeah, because he, as much as you know, there's moments with Mark Wright in this series, he knows that he's not going to get shot,
yeah,
or thrown out of a window, but he doesn't really know what exactly is coming. So there's you're really on your toes. And I think you sort of, like, say, I was use Mark's a great example of, I've watched Mark on TV and, you know, many different bits and bobs he's done, but I think in Murder and Successful, you, when he breaks and he laughs, it's lovely because that's him, you know, that's who he is, I guess.
So in a way, even though it's completely constructed and there's an artifice, you think you get almost more more of a truth from them.
I think so. I mean, that was the thing that, you know, me and the producers really talked about was trying to find a way of having a show where you could see a different side of someone. And I think that moment when they come in the office, most of the time I've never met them before. I might have sort of seen them at another shoot or whatever, but I've never really talked to them. And I'm asleep for the whole time. So from that moment is me working them out and them working me out. And it's essentially like every cop movie you'd watch. It always starts off with the two of you sort of having a little bit of a sort of like locking horns, yeah, but usually ends up with us being quite good friends. So
has there been anyone you haven't gelled with that you don't mind saying? In
not that I'd throw under the bus in such a situation like this. Yeah, I mean,
hey, maybe you should throw someone under a bus in next
series 3.
Yeah, see how they deal with that.
Kill a celebrity.
You could go really like,
it'd be great,
you
know, to have Limbit Opik, yeah, and just throw him under the bus.
Farage, yeah, Johnson.
I mean, they're queuing up to get politicians, know, yeah, we could throw under the,
I bet.
Yeah, that would be a fun thing to do.
Because you could do a sort of, you know, the film The Game with Michael Douglas, yeah, the day before. You could do a really extreme version of your show where,
yeah,
like, you properly fuck with people's heads. And
yeah, like, really just, yeah. I mean, yeah, to be honest with you, in the Mark Wright episode, by the end of it, he was, you know, I feel like I've been through the mire a bit. I've been in a crack den. I've been threatened with guns. And you realise that, yeah, for someone who comes from quite a leafy suburb in Essex,
yeah,
it's quite intense. It's certainly more intense than Take Me Out, I think.
Yeah. Know? Well, depends, you know.
Oh, yeah, it depends who you hook up with and Take Me Out. Yeah.
I think there's probably some horror stories,
yeah,
from that,
yeah,
as well. That's a whole other conversation. The strange, you know, the sort of sexual politics of...
What, Murder and Successful?
Yeah, no, of Take Me Out. But, okay, yeah, also your show.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really challenging sexual stereotypes.
Yeah, we've pushed it as much, yeah, as we can. I mean, it's a very sexy show.
I mean, no one would know that your character was bisexual, for example, would they?
He's asexual, yeah, I think. And I actually did get described as Sleet, who sort of walks hand in hand with the celebrities in a very pervy manner. I was like, I don't know, I've never thought of him as pervy.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I definitely haven't.
That's just me ilking through.
Do you know what, right? My mum, this is going off subject a little bit, but you said pervy and you wear a Mac in, don't,
yeah,
you? Yeah. Well, my mum, only the other day I went to see my mum and she told me that she got flashed.
I thought it was a lost art, flash.
Well, flashing. This is, well, when she was younger.
Oh, right. Yeah,
when,
yeah,
she,
yeah,
was a kid. And I thought, God, flashing, that was a thing.
It was
it?
Massive.
Like, why did it fade out other than it's really horrendously wrong? But
yeah, but I mean, there's other things that are wrong. I just think it's, I just like the idea of a guy flashing someone and, yeah, someone going, are you still doing that?
Yeah.
So 90s. We've all evolved. You know, feeling why, really self-conscious.
What do they get from it? Like, look at me. It's not even something there. Yeah.
I remember there was a guy called Mushy who used to hang around.
Okay, I'm not sure I want to know why.
At the local park and flash kids. Yeah, but there was nothing really to show off.
No.
I mean, if you had an amazing big penis, then,
yeah, yeah, maybe.
I'm not saying it's right. Don't go and flash if you've got
it. Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah, only okay.
Keep it to yourself.
But do you remember in like comedies in the 70s and 80s, like there'd always be a flasher,
yeah,
and he'd run off and we'd go, oh,
I'm bringing that back. Yeah, I've got a sitcom all about a flasher. Yeah. That's my next thing. It's, yeah.
The Flash. It's, yeah. I like it. You should pitch that. I think the BBC would particularly like a show,
yeah,
like,
I'm
that.
Yeah, I'm going to throw it out there.
Yeah,
I'm going to make an Edinburgh show out of it. Well, I just really relaxed, lazy flasher.
maybe he's got like another thing. He's also like, you know, really good at solving crimes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's
I've done crimes. Maybe he's like, yeah. he's sort of, he's just really good with people's feelings.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But yet can't ever quite get close to someone.
Yeah.
Which is the irony of it.
Because he's obsessed with the flash in himself.
I like it. I might pitch it before you. So, is there anyone that you really want to get on the show? Have you got like a dream list?
Yeah,
Tom Cruise.
The weird thing is having an actor do it, because we've not had that really. It's like whether an actor would preempt or they'd sort of. I think it'd either really be a car crash for them, or they'd be brilliant.
Or they'd try and be. They try and act some of their reactions,
and which I think would sort of ruin the sort of genuine feel to it. I mean, I'd love like David Beckham or someone like that.
Yeah,
Rio Ferdinand, I think would be fun. Footballers, musicians, there's
maybe
a few out there.
A series of footballers.
Yeah, just a football special, six episodes.
So they're obviously people you would like to meet, but who would be who do you think would be a? I was going to say Gazza, but you know, the last couple of times I've seen him interviewed, I think he might. Yeah. It might be the final, you know, or maybe he's been through those situations.
He'd just be literally not shocked at all.
Yeah.
This is nothing
compared to what I've been through.
This is just a Wednesday.
Yeah. have you actually approached people that you think there's no way and been surprised?
This series, there was, like, I was dying to get Chris Kamara to do it. I really wanted Chris, and he was brilliant, and Vicky was someone we were really after, and Emma Bunton, that episode was written really for Emma Bunton. So, yeah, the weird thing is it's not the thing you find out with it, is the level of the celebrity isn't always relevant to how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's how much of themselves they're happy with. Mm-hmm. So I think that if they come into it, say Vicky for example, is very she is what she is. She knows what she is. So she's not putting in a facade to be anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. What you see with her, you haven't got to spend too long breaking her down. Whereas, you know, sort of two or three people we've had on it have been, you've sort of seen like that they're not happy with them being themselves.
Right.
So you're sort of a little bit like, look, if you just relax into this, but they're so worried about how they might come across,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
And that's not in a negative that way, that's just how this industry works.
Some people
works.
Just like that, yeah. Has there ever been a point where you've sort of corpsed or. Because you've got a brilliant ensemble around you, great character comedians.
Yeah,
must
I mean,
be time
Vicky,
for, you
Vicky
know.
Made me corpse a lot, and then that episode with Paul Whitehouse was incredible. So, sort of,
you haven't had to go. I'm so sorry, guys. Can we just
no?
Do that?
That's the thing that I think I'd be out of a job if I did. I think if you go, it's the beauty of it is that whole show is essentially you're running on adrenaline.
Yeah,
so. If you start going, it's real, and it's that really weird feeling. You've done a lot of acting. It's that weird. It happens in our industry, and it might happen on the most stupid thing.
Yeah.
It's never the joke. You go, oh, that I'm going to go here. This is make me go. I mean, there's in series one. There was a bit that we couldn't use because Tom Sturton, who's a brilliant comedy actor, mm-hmm. me and him did a scene where he plays Sleek's brother, and it was just me and him going head to head as. Sort of brotherly rivals, and neither of us could sort of keep it in. It was just constant.
We did a thing together where you played a character, and I interviewed you spoof chat show, and you were really good at keeping a straight face. I was terrible.
Yeah, it's yeah. But
is it something you're quite good at? Do you think?
I think it's just years of being a wind up.
Yeah,
yeah. I think like that's the more people say that there's. Successful as genuinely as much of it Sleek's a character, but it's as close to me as anything I've done, because there's a beauty to pushing those buttons.
Mm.
There's like the scene with Deborah Maiden in the bed in series one is maybe my favourite thing I've ever filmed, because you could feel how annoyed she was getting.
Yeah.
So then for me, if I'd started laughing, it's just going to ruin it all, because that would have then made her laugh and she'd have just gone. But to really wind someone like Deborah Maiden up.
Yeah.
In a very juvenile way about a fart is the most fun you can have. Like that's what's so
a bit of a fantasy as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, it was really certainly something ticked off my sexual bucket list. But she's I mean, that's the joy of it. That's what makes it such a unique show. I think that we from a very early stage we were like, we need to keep those laughs in. If they happen, let's keep them in. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's great when everyone's on the edge of thought. And I think it's very infectious.
Yeah,
the Jamie's episode was the one, you know, first one we filmed last year. And it was, you sort of saw that when he went, and everyone, all the actors, like Tony Way and other actors, Harry Peacock, are remarkable, brilliant comedy actors, and have worked in very, but to watch those, the shoulders of Harry Peacock go in, and if you could have seen the thing. Like
the shoulders of Peacock. I love that book.
It's a great book.
So when you, because I didn't do comedy, live comedy, for a few years, probably around 2008 to 2012. Did you do live comedy? Because I never came across
I saw
you.
Your show in Edinburgh, and probably in about 2000. You were in the little room, weren't you?
Yeah.
I came to see you.
Oh, wow.
Probably the year, first year I went to Edinburgh was 2000. I was doing the Free Fringe.
Yeah.
And I did a show where I played, it's very indicative of what became Murder and Successful. So I played three characters, and I'd have people come on stage with me. And like I did one that was dating advice. And it was sort of very sort of, like a big sort of a Welsh guy who was trying to sort of, you know, sort of Peter Stringfellow-esque. And then it was just, yeah, having a laugh with people, making them very, it was very awkward.
Mm.
So that was the first sort of, and that was, I think, was the first thing that people probably, it wasn't a big buzz, but a few people had sort of stumbled upon me.
What year was that?
That'd have been about 2008, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and that was the first, so I'd only been doing little bits. There was a thing called Dougie's Sketch Night, which was in on Great Portland Street. So I used to go to that, and I used to try out bits and bobs. Johnny Fontaine was the character.
And did you, so you've been doing stuff with members of the public. That sounds a bit 70s, doesn't it? That's a bit dodgy. You have been performing comedy that involves members of the public in from the start. And is that because you... In fact, when we did our little thing together, you were like, do you mind if I get someone up on stage at the moment? You're addicted to it, aren't you?
Yeah, but I've been doing that my whole... It's dual joking, so most of my life. I always think like I did jobs that I hated. So the most fun you can have was I worked for the RSPB for like a winter when it was an awful winter. There was no building work about. So, yeah, and then as the sort of spring came, they had a competition for who'd be the first piece, something like a blue tit was going to, who'd be the first person to see a blue tit. So this guy phoned up and he was like, you know, I've just seen the first blue tit of the summer, of the spring. He's really happy with himself. And I know we had one of those about 2 weeks ago. Someone saw one. He went, that's not possible. And no one else is getting any amusement out of this but me just winding him up. And
Did you not know you wanted to do comedy for quite a long time, but you just loved pissing about?
Yeah.
It wasn't something you wanted to do when you were a kid?
Never felt like something that would ever be open to... I've got no qualifications in it, in anything. You know, now I write, I do what I do, but...
Where did you grow up? What was your...
Around Sutton and Croydon.
Yeah.
So South London, South London, Surrey. And I had no... Yeah, I mean, it was always...
I have the same problem. I grew up in a place called Beckenham.
Yeah,
I'm in
Beckenham.
People go, Kent. I'm like, well, I mean, it's on the cusp.
It feels like it should be.
A London phone number.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of found myself being a bit defensive. I think if
you're making excuses for those areas as well, aren't you, constantly?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I never genuinely thought that this would happen, that you'd fall into, you know, and it was only really thinking, well, I'll give stand-up a go and I'll try doing that. And then hating regular stand-up where I was going up and just doing the same 10 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. But you did it for a while.
Yeah, I did it for years. And but then what I really enjoyed was, weirdly, like open mic or nights where you get someone up on stage and you piss about. And then the cat, you know, you mess around with the crowd a bit, and that was the sort of stuff that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of that was the bits that for me were that where you're flying by the seat of your pants.
Yeah,
it's easy if you've got a joke you've told 20, 30, 40 times. I mean, I'm not completely, you know, it's if you can sell that for me, the joy of it was those moments of just
totally. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's annoying when you've worked slaved over a joke or a routine for months, and then you do one ad lib and the crowd goes crazy, and you're like, "Oh, great, thanks."
But then I think that comes.
What about the stuff I've worked? You know, my arse
comes down
on.
To because you I think there's a thing where even now when I watch, maybe because I'm in it, and you watch people and there's a moment where they do something,
that
then you'll see it a year later and they're still doing that thing. But the moment you see that first time they get that joke. And that moment is great, and that's for me what the best thing about our industry is, that sort of you know, that's what murder, I think Murder and Successful does. I think it, we have those moments, and there's some great jokes, there's some great writers on what we do, and there's some stuff in there that I could go, oh, that was written, you mm-hmm. know. But the stuff that I think for me always makes a show what it is those moments where it, you know,
the spontaneity.
Yeah, and that's yeah. usually comes like Jamie when he said about the pigeon and the stone. We'd done 25 minutes we'd shot and nothing really had happened, and then Jamie said about the pigeon and the stone, and you're like, well, that's we can have something with this.
Yeah.
And it's just like you
yes, we've got 4 seconds.
yeah but that's yes. it, isn't it? The amount of people going, must be loads of outtakes. Yeah. There are, but they're
depressing.
Yeah. It's usually sleep like that. Come on, for fuck's sake, say something about fucking pigeons.
They need a bit of prompting. So how old were you when you did start doing comedy?
28, 30. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was just sort of after a bit of a sort of, I'd broken up with a girl, and I was at a bit of a time in my life where I was sort of.
So you did yeah. stand up as revenge?
Yeah, not really revenge. I just I'll sort of felt her. Like she generally said, she listed some reasons why I hadn't really sort of kicked on in life, and that I never followed anything through, and that I was, you know, and I was sort of essentially doing the same job I was sort of doing since I was about 15, 16, and I was 10 years down the road and didn't have anything.
Yeah.
So she, you know, and I was one of those annoying people that you must have run into who go, you go to Bethnal Green Working Men's Club, or you go somewhere, you watch a comedian, I go, oh, I could do that. And she would be just fucking do it then. And I just was too scared. So I just think that was the kick on. I just thought, actually, no, you know what, I'll give this a try. And to be honest with you, quite quickly, you know, no massive success, but I think I had nothing. I was living at my mum and dad's. I was 28. I had nothing to lose, really. So it was just throwing yourself into something. So, and I loved it. I loved the world that opened up and the people, mm-hmm. new people that you'd meet.
Yeah.
You know, it's an amazing thing, the comedy circuit. It's a sad thing now because I don't think it is what it was when probably I started and you started.
Yeah,
because there was such a different level between the guys coming up, and there wasn't, you know, it was probably pre-brand and pre, like, the world of comedy becoming such a massive sort of mainstream, I guess. So you know, you'd have your sort of Rob Nichols and your Jim Jefferies and your guys that were just there, and then, you know, obviously the hierarchy grew, but there was a genuine, you know, and I sort of now go and watch gigs or looking at coming back into it and doing bits again. That just seems like the people up there, and then just everyone else is
yeah.
just
it's like the rest scary. Of the world.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
1%.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the 1%. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It is weird. I always end up sounding really old on this show, but having been doing it for 20 years almost,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's so, it seems harder than it ever was.
Yeah, you know? I think it is. I think it is. I think if you're coming up now, if you're starting out now, it's, you've really got to have that little something special,
mm-hmm.
and that takes time. And you know, as I know, it's like Murder and Successful is not the first thing I've written and the first thing I've done. It's not that I brought up the BBC and went, I've got this. I've got loads of failure, loads of stuff.
It doesn't matter. I'm still bitter and annoyed with you for having a TV show. I don't care if you pitched one before.
I pitched about 30.
Pitching.
I love pitching.
Do you?
That's my favourite thing.
Would you pitch even if you weren't in the business, just for like a hobby? I mean, how much do you love it?
I really enjoy it. Yeah, I mean, if someone let me have a job where I just turned up and pitched things, I think I'd have gone tried out the Apprentice if I hadn't.
Can you pitch something when you don't believe in it?
Yeah,
really. See, that's my problem, is that I'm too connected to.
Don't
my
always
real
believe
feelings.
In it. You've always got to believe. Yeah. I've never been in a position where I've pitched any show that I didn't think this could be amazing.
Sound like Taylor Swift now. I always believe, man.
I have. She's a massive inspiration in my life.
I
listened
that.
To, before every gig I used to do, I used to listen to Leona Lewis.
Yeah?
Yeah. It gave me that oomph I needed.
What? Bleeding Love.
Oh, A Moment Like This. There we go.
A moment
some
like this.
Some people wait a lifetime.
Oh Christ!
For a
yeah.
moment.
You mean the actual?
Yeah, man.
X
the song
Factors,
that yeah,
winners.
That was that was that
it.
Song got me through.
Yeah.
Every early gig I did.
You're a surprise.
Yeah.
You're full
mate,
of surprises.
Mate, if I get up any day and I feel I don't feel 100%.
If you get up.
Sometimes I don't. That's the difference.
Right.
You sometimes sleep. I just lay there just listening to power ballads.
Yeah. Right.
If I get, you must have had days where you haven't got up. You just laid in bed.
Not actually, I have. I went through a couple of dark periods in the last.
And that what I'm January saying, was the light that comes into your life, mate, will come through a power ballad.
I had no idea Leona Lewis had that power.
Yeah. Jesus, man. That voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's days that I genuinely sit at my desk here and I think, God, what's she doing now? She gave me so much hope and so much. So much.
And what, you're worried about?
No, I'm worried about what she's doing, because I'd like to return a favour.
Yeah.
I'd like to go, look, here's some
jokes. maybe Murdering Successful gets her out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
So you never know. Yeah, Leona, if you happen to listen to this, check it out.
Have a watch. And I hope that for your dark times, I can do for you what you did for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice moment. Thank you for that. That really feels like I've...
If I see her in season three, I want some kind of thanks. For this,
but without a doubt,
this hookup.
If she turns up on set and goes, I had no idea about this show, and then I heard about you and Dan and Clark chatting, and I didn't realise I was so important in your life. So I was like, I do like
to connect people in the arts who wouldn't normally get together. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
you should maybe look into becoming like a celeb booker. Just through this show.
Yeah, okay. Who else could we put together? Maybe. Whitehall and the little Cranky.
He knows her. Everyone knows her. She's a great... The Cranky's a good night out.
Really?
Yeah.
Being serious?
Yeah, man. She is. That's the party central.
Really?
Yeah.
Is she always the last one standing?
Yeah. Is she going to my wedding?
In a way, she was so ahead of the time because that was the first transsexual...
Yeah.
And in reverse as well.
Yeah.
Way before knew about LGBT,
I only found out really, really recently that wasn't just a little guy. I thought for a long time it was Warwick Davis. So
we are wandering in some dangerous territory here.
You brought us here.
So what kind of stuff did you, when before you got into comedy, what was it that you used to like watching? And what? Think, oh man, I'd love to do that. Like, whether it was on TV or films or...
Sort of...
The Crankies.
The Crankies, I wanted to be the big brother.
The big guy.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, they were brother and brother. Anyway, we've gone back there.
Maybe start a little podcast about the Crankies.
Yeah. Hey, we should get my producers in the room. We should get the Crankies in.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have Jimmy Cranky and Leona Lewis next series, if we do one. Sort of gangsterish films, Goodfellas and stuff like that was stuff that was. I loved anything Tarantino, then musicals and I like a musical.
You like a musical?
I love a musical.
What's your favourite musical?
Hairspray.
Which we get onto now. Well, there's a segue for you. I wasn't going to ask you yet, but you got.
No, it's my favourite musical.
You're talking about. So this is every week we do we ask our guests to do pick a guilty pleasure, and that can be a film that they know is shit, but they love, or they think is actually really great but just misunderstood. Which camp does that fit?
I think it's amazing. I mean,
you're talking about the original, Waters one.
The Ricky Lake.
Yeah,
yeah. I watched it. When we talk about your lowest ebb, I watched that story of Tracy Turnblad and was massively inspired. Genuinely, I think it's a brilliant film.
How old are you? Do you mind me asking?
37.
Okay, a couple of years younger than me. Yeah. So I went to the cinema to see Hairspray.
Really?
Now. Not on purpose.
Right. Date?
Kind of. I was stood in the queue to go and see, I think, Three Men and a Baby or something.
God, you are. How old are you?
Very, very close. I just turned 40.
Oh, happy 40.
Thank you.
Great.
Yeah, thanks.
You actually were really good for it. Generally, I generally remember watching your show, and you actually haven't aged a day.
Oh.
You still look, you could go and play a 21-year-old. I could play a 21-year-old when I was 13.
Yeah.
I looked about 45.
Oh, well, look, this has absolutely made my day. So we can wrap up now. I'm going to go and get a few pints. I was stood in a queue to go. I think it was Three Men and a Baby or Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. A film like that. a bit, I was going to say, you know, like a man's film, like yeah. Three Men
and a Little Lady, that infamous action movie.
And me and my mate met some girls in the queue. They were going to see Hairspray. And he was really confident, this friend of mine. We were like 11, I think. We were 11. Yeah. And he chatted them up and we went and watched Hairspray and just French kissed in the back row. First time
ever. Were you and your friend or you?
Yeah, we were like, come on, like this, girls. Look, we'll show you how you do
it. Is this sexy?
I mean, we were watching a John Waters film. Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. No, it was... it was the first time I ever kissed a girl properly.
Wow.
With tongues. So I don't really remember an awful lot about Hairspray, other than it is incredibly camp and
full of
bright colour and sort of a
bit.
It's
one of those films, I think, that if you look at it principally as just going, it's very camp and it's very... But it actually, it's got a genuine... I watch it and, as I was saying about Leanne, look, I generally think it's got an amazing storyline and it's got an... You know, I always just think it's sort of, you know, her quest and her to do what she wants to do. It sort of breaks down barriers. I find it very inspiring.
When did you... How old were you when you first saw it?
Probably about 28, yeah, 27, 28. Literally would not the sort of thing that I'd ever... And I think it was on, like, film four of an afternoon. And I just ended up...
Did you just say of an afternoon?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't know people still say that.
Yeah, I mean... I've
You're quite old school, aren't you?
Old school London, yeah.
It was of an afternoon. The shops had shut.
This is me. This is what you get when you put me in this scenario is me trying to talk well.
You don't have to. Yeah, no. I mean, this is a weird scenario. Obviously, people that are listening to the podcast and not... We've filmed this one, so if you're watching it, you'll see. But we're in an office where Tom works.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a... bit like the strangest job interview ever. Like,
it does feel like it feels like genuinely I wish I'd cleared up before. And the guy that I write with and directs my stuff is essentially a bit like my wife, in the sense that he will be like, look how dirty it looks on there, and there's just rubbish everywhere. Which I'm
so you're getting it from both ends, aren't you?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, the nagging.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that either of them are nags. They're both
beautiful, wonderful people.
They're both very attractive.
And you could do nothing without them.
No, and on both accounts, I'm batting, you know, hitting far below my, above my station.
Who spoons the best?
My wife, so, yeah. She's a little spoon,
You got married quite recently.
Yeah. What, 3 months ago?
Where was my invite? We weren't close enough then, were we?
No, it's a funny thing, you know, where people always say, are you married?
No.
Right, so as soon as you get married, you will literally, everyone you bump into, for about, well, ever since now, so it's what, three, there's a guy who gets on my train in the morning.
Yeah.
And he went, saw you on Soccer AM the other morning. I went, oh, yeah. He went, didn't know you got married? I went, yeah, it's around the corner. He went, where's my invite? And I thought, what? Like, you got on my train.
Yeah,
I'll live up the road.
What would the nameplate be, guy from the train?
Yeah. Where am I sitting? I don't know, mate.
Wow, that is... I mean, the wedding thing's quite difficult, though, because unless you've got shitloads of money, you do have to stop inviting people number, don't
you? My problem is that guy from the train nearly got invited. I have an obsession. I meet people. I love people.
Mm.
You know, it's what my job is, and so I'll meet and I'll go to my wife. Oh, da da da! Oh, yo, this fellow, cleans the offices at work. Luke, what a lovely man! Yeah. You know, he's coming to the wedding.
He's bringing his wife.
it's just he's going to sing a song. So it's a funny thing. You have to be really careful of what it can spiral out of control quite easily. Yeah. It was a great day.
Good.
Best day of my life,
yeah.
Yeah, I loved every second of it.
I always worry, like, I don't think it would be, I'm in a relationship and I love my girlfriend deeply, but I always worry, like, not with her, if it was someone else or other people, do they ever get to the wedding and go,
I think if you're worried about what other people think on a day of your wedding, there's a bigger problem than...
Not what other people think, but like, does either the bride or groom at the end of the day go?
Again, I think it was...
A bit underwhelming, really.
I mean, because hopefully I'll only ever get married once, and I didn't have that. I mean, there must be...
You could marry her again. Yeah, it sounds like you enjoyed it.
like every year. Yeah. This is getting expensive. Yeah. there must be people out there who think... Well, I mean, I went to a wedding last year in Cyprus, and... 20% of the people turned up and it was pretty, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was a bit heartbreaking, really.
Well, if you can have it in a club in Iron Apple,
yeah,
then, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
some dropouts. well, Tom, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been a pleasure, thank
and
you.
I've.
What it's like.
Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank Hairspray, right?
Yeah.
Was the original, because I can't quite remember, was it a musical as well?
Yeah,
they did
yeah.
a remake.
Yeah.
There were
yeah,
songs in yeah, the original.
It was still a musical.
To show how much I was paying attention.
Yeah.
I was snogging my mate.
Yeah.
well, we're going to play out with this song from Hairspray. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you. Bless you.